I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC, and I'm super excited today. I get to talk to actor John Cryer. You know him from Two and a Half Men, Pretty in Pink. He's Lex Luthor in the TV Marvel Universe. He's been in scads of television shows and movies. He's politically outspoken, and we love that. We're going to have a great conversation, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with actor John Cryer. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to have you here. You don't even know.
Wow. Although you just ratcheted up the excitement. You're like, oh no. At first I introduced you, but I hadn't really gotten the implications of you being here. And it just dawned on me halfway through the second sentence. But hello.
Well, I mean, squee. So.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Thanks. I already have like told you off mic how much I love you. So I won't keep saying that. But
yes,
I just have to tell
stop.
You.
Please.
Before we like start this official, I have to talk to you about my degrees of separation from you.
Okay.
And so it's Conchata Farrell, Holland Taylor, MSW Media, and then you follow me. So Obviously you follow me. Thank you. Oh my God. But okay, so the Conchata Farrell, it's just they're very little. But back in the day, I used to be an actor, and my friend Rich told me that he studied with Conchata and gave me her phone number. So I called her and I had a brief conversation with her. And basically she told me she didn't teach anymore. So that was that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, she used to teach at UCLA. So every year she'd have me come in and give a talk to the students. She took it very seriously and it weighed on her and she really she's an amazing, amazing lady. She was so wonderful to work with on that show. Cares so deeply about mm-hmm. people. I think that's what everybody who knew her really came away feeling about her.
Yeah, I mean, she was very authentic. It was just kind of no question about that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Holland Taylor, I had the privilege of interviewing her when she did her one-woman show and the Ann Richards show, which was just amazing because I don't know if anybody knows this, but I can't remember the name of the streaming service, but you can get Broadway shows on your television. And I was able to watch that show. She blows my mind. I've always loved her. I remember her on Bosom Buddies.
Yes.
And then she played your mom. So that's also, I mean, what was that
I
like?
was an enormous fan of hers. We she and I did a pilot together that never aired, called The Medicine Show, where I was a young doctor and she was a hospital administrator, and I was just I was fangirling the entire time. I was trying to find excuses to sit next to her at lunch, and we had a great time, and. Obviously working on Two and a Half was 12 years of wonderfulness. And then actually I was one of the producers on Anne on that
Oh,
show.
really? Wow.
But I mean, she worked herself to the bone on that
Yeah.
show. If you see the show, it's just an astonishing piece of work. And she wrote it as well, by the
Yeah.
way.
Yes.
So she went through just hell and high water to get that thing to Broadway, and just did an amazing, amazing job.
Yeah, I mean, she totally channeled her. She was so good.
It was astonishing,
Yeah.
astonishing piece of work. Actually, that was for a while the longest running solo show on Broadway. That
Wow.
I don't know if it still is, but
Right.
when she finished her run, she had been doing it longer than anybody else.
Well, and then of course, I didn't mention this in the degrees, and this isn't really a degree, but I mentioned this when I was pitching you and wanting you to come on the show, that back in the day, I got to go to Woody Harrelson's. I think it was his birthday party, but it was also a release party for White Men Can't Jump. And it
Okay.
was like the coolest. Oh my God, it was fucking amazing. And here's the problem though. The reason I went was because my mom is also an actor. I was an actor, she was an actor. This was like in the 90s. And one of her friends was in White Men Can't Jump and got invited to this party. So it was in Malibu by the water. It was the most insane A-lister party I've ever been to. There was a stage and Melissa Etheridge and Woody were performing. There was like food. There was food from all over. And like every famous person was there. Everyone.
But
And
not
so,
me.
but not you.
I just want to say I was not invited to this party. It sounds great. It sounds great, Kimberly. I'm so glad you had a great time at that party. And by the way, I knew Woody. He was on Broadway at the same time I was. That he chose not to invite me is I mean, it sounds great. It sounds like a great party that I was
Okay,
not
but there was
invited to.
this guy came up to me and he was like, "Hey, I know Charlie Sheen."
Okay.
And like I guess he was telling me that I think he told me Charlie was going to show up to this party. And I guess he was using Charlie to kind of talk to me, but I really wasn't interested in either one. So, there was that. But yeah, it was the coolest party I've ever been to in my life. I've been to two A-list parties, and that one was the best. And the thing that really sucked about it was that my mother at the time, she was like doing a gazillion. She was a clown at kids' parties. She
Okay.
was a caterer. I don't know, she had like 15 different jobs because that's how actors are.
Yeah,
And
that's what we do.
we had a, but we weren't famous. So we had the next morning, we had a commercial acting class, and which I was never good at the whole commercial audition thing. And it was with this really, like, she had a reputation of being a really hard ass casting director. Her name was Shancy Pierce, and she really was a hard ass. And anyway, I was like willing. My mom's like, "We gotta leave now because I'm so tired from all my jobs at this party, and we have to go to this class." And I'm like, "Fuck the class. Let's stay at the party." And we had to leave because I went with my
Oh
mom.
no. Oh, I didn't realize this story ended in tragedy. I'm sorry. I was just sort of bubbling along on my high of thinking of Woody and Melissa playing a duet. But now I know you probably missed the duet because you had to leave with your
That's like when we
stupid
were
mom.
leaving during the duet. Not
Oh
fair.
no. Oh
Not fair.
no. Oh, this is
Okay, but
hurt.
enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Yes.
Okay,
Yes.
so
Get back to
all
me.
right, so oh wait, hold on. I mentioned
Oh,
MSW Media, and that's because you had a podcast on. What was your podcast on MSW Media?
Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
That's
You
right.
guys were great with that. Yes, that was a look at the Iran-Contra scandal through the eyes of John Mattis, who was one of the first people who stumbled on it. It's an amazing story. John Mattis was a local public defender in Miami who has this guy, because he gets assigned all the goofballs and weirdos. And this guy came in and said, they arrested me for having a machine gun in my house, but they can't do that because I work for the CIA. And he was like, sure you do. And the guy said, you don't believe me? Call this phone number. And so John Mattis said, okie dokie. And he dialed the number, and it was the White House.
Wow.
It was the chiefs of staff. And he ended up being one of the people who uncovered the Iran-Contra scandal, really, really fascinating story. Also, just amazing characters at the time, because the United States was involved in an illegal war, the government had to work with all these nuts and drug dealers and militia guys. And it's because you happen to go through channels of people willing to illegally fight a war. So it becomes this kind of bizarre trip to the dark side. I mean, like at one point the international powerboat champion plays a part in it, while he's racing from the Caribbean to Miami with James Caan by his side. I mean, it's just like you're like this. I did not expect this story to go this way. But it's called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. A guy named Jack Bryan wrote and produced it, he did a thing called Active Measures, a documentary called Active
Yes.
Measures. Yeah, and he's a really talented guy. And that was a really fun, interesting story, and a real intro into how very powerful people are just not held accountable.
Right.
The Reagan administration was caught doing something incredibly illegal. The major participants barely had any consequences, and Ronald Reagan, in fact, was entirely unscathed by
Of
it.
course.
So these kinds of presidential unaccountability has unfortunately dogged us since, obviously, Watergate. It's you feel you tend to feel like if we'd come down a little harder on that, maybe we wouldn't be what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, indeed. Well, before we get into the politicals, I want to ask you a couple of questions just about your life as an actor,
Okay.
and then I kind of want to go into some politics. But, speaking of living in a country where people aren't held accountable, just this is just a strange question, but how do you stay entertained in this fascist chapter of America? Because, I mean, it's really important, I think, that we take care of ourselves and laugh, or be
Yeah,
entertained.
well, right now we're in a very weird moment because it is clear if we were observing what is happening in the United States, happening in any other country, we would say this is an authoritarian government takeover. This is what has occurred. But because we're inside it, and because it hasn't affected that our daily lives that much, we still come home and watch the Love Island reunion
Yes.
episode, which wasn't very good, by the way. I want to give everybody a heads up. There's a couple of moments of drama, but whatever. Anyway, but my point being that that our we don't perceive it. A fundamental our country has been betrayed in a way that it has not been since the Civil War. This is a huge change in America and our government and how we see ourselves. But we're still going about doing our normal things, but I do believe that, people, you can, be miserable all the time with the things that that we as citizens have very little control over because we're all individual citizens. We're not, I'm not a billionaire. So we do have to take our joy where we can find it. And I love, I love television. I love making television. I love comedy. I love going out to clubs. This is a great time to go out to comedy clubs. A lot of comedians are doing some pretty amazing political commentary at the same time while being hilarious. You know, Marc Maron has got a wonderful special out right now. You know,
so good.
So you can feel a part of it, and you can get community, and you can, you know, say, you know, this is a surreal moment. You know, but you also have to show up at the demonstrations,
right?
And you also have to vote, and you also have to talk to your friends and say, hey, wait a minute, America is fundamentally different now. You know, we have a convicted criminal in the White House who has opened the doors to crime, and he's basically, by, you know, he's shaking down all these corporations, he's shaking down these you know, lawyer, legal firms. He's shaking down entertainment companies. He's, you know, this is a mafia state. But because he's done it publicly, people think for some reason that it's okay, or there is a sizable amount of the public that feel like, well, you know, some, you know, the New York Times would have a blaring headline, America, a mafia state, if this would really happen.
Right.
But no, you know, the New York Times is bending over backwards to say, you know, Trump seems to be a new kind of president, you know? So it's like they say, well, the New York Times isn't even all that alarmed by it, you know?
Right.
So, you know, it is a, it's a dichotomy that people are having a very hard time digesting.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting you say that, because one of the things that I like to do, I watch, I'm not going to get into the details of who she is, but it's a woman on YouTube, and she kind of just like shares parts of her life and what she does. And, you know, I wonder about her, because everything seems like everything's great. You know, she's just excited to buy this new thing from Target, which I don't want to get in the Target thing. But, you know, she buys stuff to decorate her house from Target. She takes her kids out. And I'm like, do you know what's happening? Are you aware? Because I know there's a huge part of the country that isn't even aware, because like you said, our lives, some lives have changed, but most people in America haven't really, outside of maybe some rising prices in groceries and stuff like that, we're not really, or I should say in some blue cities, seeing a military presence.
Yes, it's
but
very disturbing.
Most people in America are not really feeling the change that's going on. They're not paying attention, so they don't know, and they don't feel it yet. Although I have a feeling that that's not going to, it's not going to be too long before.
Yes, they will in the coming months.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of regular folks who expect to get a COVID booster.
Right.
And they're about to be told you can't get one unless you go to a doctor and get a prescription for one. And you have to have, you know, you have to have some debilitating issue that means that it's okay for you to get it. And, oh, yeah, by the way, that debilitating issue might get mentioned to your insurance company and you might not be able to get insurance anymore. You know,
right.
I mean, they don't. You know, people haven't come up against the ramifications by and large, but they will over the next few months, and obviously next couple of years. You know, but again, it might be too late then. You know, politically. So, you know, I, you know, obviously, I don't want anybody to suffer. You know, I don't want anybody to go through hardship. I'm really sad that people chose a convicted criminal to, you know, run the nation. I'm baffled why they felt that was a good idea.
Yeah.
But we're going to be dealing with the consequences for a long time.
Yes, we will. And of course, we went into politics, but I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about your famousness.
Okay. That should be like, you know, when you say your majesty, it's like, hi, John. No. Excuse me, refer to me as your famousness.
Your
Thank
famousness.
You.
So what part of being famous has surprised you the most?
Surprised me the most.
Or like maybe not the most, but what is one of the most surprising parts, I should say, of being a famous person?
Well, oh gosh, I it's only as bad as you kind of let it be. I mean, you know, there are, I like to look at it as being the mayor of a small town. It feels like you're the mayor of a small town. I mean, because you go into the supermarket and there's a bunch of people who know you and they have ideas about you and you don't necessarily know them. or maybe you do, but it's nice to see them. It's nice to know that they care about your work, whether they like it or not, you know. Some of them just want a moment with you. They want to feel like you heard them. and are grateful to meet them for a moment, and that's great, you know. And I'm happy to do that. That was part and parcel of doing what I do. You know, you don't become an actor so that nobody ever pays attention to what you do. You know, so that I've had some connection with people through comedy or through, you know, even going back to like Pretty in Pink or whatever, you know, that they felt some connection to me. I'm grateful for that, and it's very valuable. So I, you know, I'm generally very happy to take time with people. Although I have to say, once recently I did a goofy little show. They did a live reading of Return of the Jedi. I was C-3PO, but I came out and I was swarmed by autograph seekers. And by the way, it's been a long time since I was absolutely swarmed by autograph seekers. You know, obviously when I was on the show, that happened a lot, but you know, it's been the show ended in 2015 or whatever. So, but the big issue was that my wife and I have a new puppy, and we had to crate her, and she was crated, and my wife wasn't home that night while I was doing the thing, and I was like, I got to get home to uncrate my puppy, and that cut no ice with the autograph seekers. I was like, do you
They don't
understand?
care.
There is a puppy in a crate that needs to be released from that crate.
But you are John Cryer, your
But I am
famousness,
John
so
Cryer, and so I try to. But you know, again, I was a huge fan. There's plenty of actors who I was an enormous fan, and the second I got a minute of FaceTime with them, you know, I was a dork, and you know, and but it was by, but you know, having a connection with an artist is a big deal. You know, it's something we should honor. So I try to honor it as much as possible. I don't love that I've I don't like I do when I do talk about politics. I really wish I didn't have to. I only started talking about politics when Trump arose, because if you're in any way familiar with history, like at all, you see exactly who this guy is. You know, he's a strong man, authoritarian. You know, again, I almost hate calling him that because it plays into his own stupid imagery, his you know, hyper masculine bullshit. But it's cosplay, obviously, in his case. He's a doddering idiot. But you could see that that's who he was, and that's who he was going to be from day one. And so I felt like, oh, I'm sorry, I got to wade into this. I really hadn't done it before. And so now it is a little weird. I do cringe a little because when people recognize me, I always wonder, are they somebody who's going to be unhappy with what I've said? You know, but again, that's I can't let that stop me again, because I am aware of history and how these things go.
And we're, I know I speak for many when we say that we're grateful for your voice and for anybody who has a large platform, because as somebody who's as influential as you are, your words have weight. Sometimes your words have more weight than others, and that's just because of the way human psychology is. We have these people that we adore and we love, and then so we hear them share an opinion, and maybe it validates our own or it introduces us to something that we hadn't thought of. So I do want to say thank you for that. And then I also just remembered I have one more degree of separation from you, which is Harry Dean Stanton. Did you
Oh
know that Harry Dean used to play music?
yes, yes. I've been to a couple of parties where he broke out his guitar, and
Well,
no, he's got a great country, you know, crooner thing going on.
he was wonderful, and
He
he used
was
to play at
wonderful.
a place called Jack's Sugar Shack in LA. And he played with this guy Jamie James, and Jamie was the guitarist, and I used to kind of go out with Jamie. So there you go. There's another degree of separation.
That's not separation. That sounds very close
No, I don't know.
to me.
What happened
I
between Jamie and me was not really
don't
going out. It was a weird friendship. That's
Oh,
basically
okay.
what it was. It was like we kissed,
Oh,
but that was about it. Like we didn't do much
you
more.
don't
So
have to describe every
I
bit
won't
of
go into much more
intimacy.
detail.
Well, you know, he tried to grab my ass, but I sort of walked away. I sort of shifted. It was fine. It was no big deal. He was taking a shot. Whatever.
But I just remembered that was another degree. And anyway,
Okay.
but Harry was awesome and I met him several times. He was very cool. Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. I want to ask you. Oh, yeah. Here's what I want to ask you. What is something, okay, I'm going to say interesting You can define it any way you like, but what is
Okay.
something interesting about you that we don't know or that we would be interested in knowing? Maybe that's a better way of saying it.
I am a huge, I guess you could call it an aficionado. I'm fascinated by the space race.
Wow.
I love that period of history. It's really fascinating to me. It's got a lot of horrible, ironic, parts of it in terms of, this was the era of civil rights,
Yeah.
and America trying to sort of see itself and better itself and trying to achieve something with the moon landing that was an assertion of soft power, an idea being that instead of war, we would show the world that we were, we were the best way to live, and again, for all that's, I mean, again, there's horrible ironies in that, that so much money was spent on the space program, yet poverty was horrible in the United States at the time, and obviously we were dealing with the, racial tumult at the time, we're totally done with that, by the way. Now we're totally, everything's peaceful.
Everything's perfect.
everything's perfect now. But it is an incredibly fascinating period of history, and I had always been fascinated with the Soviet side because we, as Americans, we barely heard about that. For Americans, it's like we won the space race, and that's all that happened. And it's like, well, no, there was actually they beat us to every every achievement before that. They got they had Sputnik, and they had the first man, Yuri Gagarin, and the first woman in space, Valentina Tereshkova, and the first multiple crew members and the first spacewalk and the first, I mean, they were, they did everything before we did. And it was a very different and their space program was a totally it was very ironic because we had a almost socialized space program. Lyndon Johnson broke it up amongst the states. There was a huge bureaucracy. It was all done in very sort of plodding fashion. Meanwhile, the Soviets, who were famous for splitting things up and being very slow and plodding, were basically cowboys. They were just shooting off things every few weeks. So it's again fascinating, and the history of it is just endlessly fascinating to me.
Have you watched For All Mankind?
I have
Yes, I'm
thoroughly
sure you
enjoyed
loved
it.
that. I love
Thoroughly,
that. Love that
yes.
series. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I lived in Soviet Russia when I was 12.
I did
So
not know that.
yeah, so my father worked for ABC News. He was a cameraman, and that's why I had the opportunity to go. And I remember when Trump was first elected, and Hillary Clinton kept telling us what the deal was and how Russians were backing him. And I, even though I understood communism in a way, or at least I should say Soviet communism, more so than other people have the opportunity anyway, it didn't even hit me when she was warning us what was going on. And then, in 2017, when he became president, and then we started finding out that Russians were helping him, it's like dawned on me. Oh. And I mean, I didn't vote for him, so too late and everything doesn't really matter because I voted for her. But I realized, oh, this country could turn very quickly. People don't realize that. They are quick to tell you, oh, it'll never happen here. And it's happening here. And that first term we had guardrails, this term we don't. So it's really scary because there's a picture circulating on the internet today of DC. And it's some federal building with Trump's, I think it looks like his mugshot. And then you're seeing, and it's like draped, just like you'd
It's
see in
huge
China,
banners. Yeah,
the
it's a huge
banner.
banner. I believe it's the Department of Labor because
Okay, there you go.
the head of it, the secretary, at the big meeting yesterday was talking about you can come see your big beautiful face on the
Oh,
side of this
God.
building. It's horrifying to watch. It's just you can't believe that this is America. But
No.
yes, I mean people always wondered, what's Trump's thing with Russia? And it's like, why is he so entranced by Putin? And it's like it's not. It's not that I don't know if Putin has,
I think he does.
He may, I don't know. For years, obviously, the Russian mafia was very active in New York City. The mafias of all stripes in New York City were very active. Obviously, if you're in construction and real estate, you have to deal with mafia controlled businesses. Mm-hmm. So who knows what happened? I don't, we obviously know the money laundering that Trump's Taj Mahal was involved with. They were fined $10 million, which was the largest federal fine at that time. So obviously, I don't know exactly what went down there. It's clear to me, and I asked Michael Cohen about this, and he agreed that it's not necessarily that he's being extorted by Putin. Trump just really wants to be Putin. America's Putin. He wants to turn the United States into a mafia state like Putin's Russia is. Obviously, you were there when communism was, which was a very different kind of authoritarianism. Right. Obviously, when communism collapsed, all the state assets got sold off and became controlled by oligarchs and mm-hmm. And organized crime. Organized crime had been functioning under the surface in communist Russia, but that was when they sort of came out because the government had basically collapsed. And the government, was broke. So, mm-hmm. Whoever controlled the government assets could make billions. So you get this oligarchical mafia state, and that's what Russia is. And that's what Trump is trying to do right now, is he wants, a mafia state. Obviously, the Republicans want to dismantle the federal government enough that they can privatize most of their most of its functions and resegregate the United States, and obviously paternalize the law so that the law is basically patriarchal again.
Yes.
So that's what they want long term, and he's their instrument for doing that. But I don't know if how much he's going to bite them in the ass in terms of his autocratic tendencies.
Okay, well, many people are hoping.
Where are you going with this?
You know what many people are hoping for. It's the thing that when you wake up every morning, you're like checking your phone. Did it happen yet? Did it happen mm-hmm. yet? So there, it's funny, and I talk about this a lot on my show, but there are a lot of people out there, whether they are, political analysts. I love seeing, on YouTube, I did a collection of, there's like Keith Edwards, Adam Mockler, David Pakman, all these young guys, and they're talking about politics. The question is like, is Trump dying? Even Keith Olbermann, is Trump dying? Mm-hmm. Everybody's asking the question. So that question is basically, people think that he's not going to make it these 4 years. There's a lot of people, whether it's like friends of my family, people online, whatever. Maybe it's just hopeful thought. We don't know what's going to happen to him. But along these lines, let's just say that something happens and Trump is not able to fulfill his term. Whether he, there's some medical incident that keeps him from the presidency, or he actually, says goodbye to the world. Then we would get J.D. Vance. And there's all this speculation about what kind of a president he would be. And, it's my estimation that he would be a horrible president, and then he would totally use the levers of power to do everything, to get Project 2025 solidified and all of that. He's an oligarch. But he does not have the same charisma Donald Trump has with the MAGA base. So my question to you is, if we are faced with the J.D. Vance presidency, where do you, I like to say this, I said this to Brian Karam last week, I know you're not an oracle, but at the same time, do you have any kind of feeling of where that might go? He's not a popular guy. What do you think that would look like? And how do you think that that would affect the population? How do you think they would see him?
It's really hard to tell. He is not liked. He obviously has zero charisma.
Zero.
I don't know. He has, his backstory is full of, a far right intellectuals. I'll put that mm-hmm. in air quotes. you know, and I don't think he had. I mean, the reason we are where we are is because of the Republicans in Congress. It is that they are. There's a few of them who pretend that they know he's an asshole, but you know, we're getting some stuff done. You know, but a lot of them are nutty Trumpers, are you know, Trump cultists. So I don't. I do think they will probably collapse to infighting and not be able to govern
Oh,
effectively.
please.
But I don't know, you know.
I know.
And they are running up against their own things. You know, obviously the Epstein scandal is you know, a thing they poured gasoline on that fire, and now it's burning their own asses, you know. You know, by the way, I just want to say I don't know that there's a smoking gun there. You know, I mean, I have some real questions about it. Like, remember there were these data CDs that were wheeled out. We all saw them on camera, and the FBI has those. They were supposedly photo CDs. Obviously, I have zero interest in seeing the photos, but I do want to know who's in them.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, by the way, Jeffrey Epstein was. He was an incredibly wealthy guy. He sponsored all kinds of conferences. That's a way of sort of, you know, washing your reputation with people, because you're paying all these wonderful people. You're paying their way to come show up at my conference. And all these people are like, okay, I'll take a free trip, you know. And so you have them, but you also have people who are like, oh, I hear he procures young women, you know, who probably show up because they're hoping to have one of those young women, you know. So you know, there's going to be just people who showed up for the conference, and there's going to be awful people, you know.
Yes.
But we know Trump is on the list, you know, or Trump is on the flight logs. We know that. You know, obviously they had a team of FBI agents scouring his, you know, redacting his name from the file. So there was like 1,000 of them, supposedly. So that's a lot of places. And he's a confessed serial sexual predator. You know, he admitted it, you know. So I don't know that there's a smoking gun. I mean, obviously we you know, that birthday card was, you know, incredibly damning. And
disgusting.
He, by the way, is claiming that that isn't him.
Of course.
You know, I mean, he was saying, I don't draw things, you know, which
except
does,
that he totally draws things.
Exactly. So I mean, that's, you know, this is hurting him deservedly, you know. But again, I don't know that there's necessarily anything in there that's, you know, him caught in flagrante with, you know, somebody inappropriate. But Ghislaine stood up for him, so I'm sure he's totally on the
Yeah,
level.
He's just a stand-up guy.
Yes. So at any rate, you know, by the way, I don't know even. Clearly, he's getting IVs. He's getting his hands have been they've been and they've clumsily trying to cover that up and lying about it at White House press conferences. Oh, he got that from shaking hands. You know, it's they're clearly lying about his medical condition. We know that. I don't know that that's sick enough for him to actually pass away in the next 3 years. You know, I honestly don't want him. You know, I don't want President Vance. I don't, you know, this whole thing is a flipping disaster.
Yes.
You know, I don't wish death on anybody. And you know, I hope, I mean, wouldn't it be great if just one day he said, you know what, this was a bad idea. And he said,
never
you know
mind.
What? Let's, you know what, I'm going to step down. JD, you step down. Let's all step down. You know, this was, I don't know what I was thinking.
We only can wish. Well, yes. I know you're not hoping for anyone's death, and I'm not going to say publicly that I am either, but there's a lot of many people are hoping. So I'm just, many people.
Again, he's already harmed a lot of people, and the amount of people that are going to be harmed in the next couple of years is, you know, is massive. You know, but he's of course going to deflect and say, it's not me, it's not this, it's not, you know,
It's the Democrats. It's always, it's Joe Biden. It's always going to be Joe Biden or Barack Obama's fault. So.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So.
Okay. So another question for you. That's not necessarily, I know you can only speculate, but I just thought this was kind of interesting, and I had Greg Oliar on a while back, and he did this deep dive into, you know, Nazi Germany and the rise of Hitler. And he was saying the one thing that we have going for us is that we do have resistance within our government, because as we're seeing right now, Gavin Newsom, Pritzker, a number of Democrats are standing up. It's my personal belief that they all should, and not all of them are, but that's a whole nother conversation. But we're also seeing resistance. Okay, so that wasn't existing in early part of the rise of Nazism. And then also there really wasn't a resistance from just regular people. And I want to note that there is a lot of resistance. A lot of these people who are showing up to protests are boomers. And I know boomers get a bad rap. And maybe in some cases deservedly because of who they vote for. But I'm Gen X, and Gen X disappointed us this time too. The older people are showing up.
They absolutely are. Yeah. I mean, Stephen Miller recently said, it's a bunch of old hippies. Well, there you go. The old hippies are clearly scaring the shit out of Stephen Miller. you know, so great.
And I'll take it. I think we all should be.
Yeah. And it is frustrating for me because you go to like the No Kings demonstration, which was huge. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, demonstrations don't get a lot of coverage unless there is violence. And if you recall, like the Tea Party, if you remember the Tea Party, you know, that was like five guys who would show up to everything with their tricorn hats and yell and have some some doofy signs. And that got enormous coverage.
Of course it did.
Huge media coverage for years. Mm-hmm. And No Kings was millions of people. And it is just not being, I think a lot of the, unfortunately, the media, because there is now a billionaire class that owns the media now, they are reticent to play into the narrative that is clearly occurring, which is that people are furious. I mean, people are furious. If you go to a town hall, people are showing up to town halls, which doesn't really happen that much.
Right.
and that people are incredibly vocal at these things. You know, I mean, in LA, I went to one LA, it's a very fractious, you know, people, there's always a million things to argue about in LA. Everybody has a million things that they disagree on. But the one area of total unanimity was the rage directed at ICE. And we have racism here. We have, we have lots of, you know, there's plenty of people who don't like immigrants, but there is, by the way, a shocking number of immigrants who don't like immigrants, but the rage at masked, gunmen, you know, abducting people off the street, abducting people from their court hearings, the barest pretext of reasons for claiming these people are violent, either, by the way, a lot of them are absolutely documented. They're going through the process. You know, they're not undocumented people. That was there was utter unanimity at the town hall that I went to.
That's good to hear. And I mean, I think that is, you know, again, going with Greg, what Greg was saying, there is stuff that's happening in this country that gives us hope, which, okay, so this leads me to my last question. Okay. And, you know, I know you're a busy guy. You got other places to go, other people to see. So I'm so grateful you have this time to give me. And let's end this with, like, what are you seeing that gives you hope?
What gives me hope is the town halls in red states.
Yes.
That's what gives me hope, because there's video, you know, almost every day of somebody just tearing into a Republican publicly. You know, that's real bravery. You know, is people in their communities, people, you know, going before a group of people who probably a bunch of those people know them, you know, and very bravely saying, you are full of it. You are utterly full of it. You said a bunch of things that you were going to do, and you guys aren't doing any of it. You know, you guys are just sucking up to Trump at this point. You don't care about, Medicare, Medicaid. You don't care about preserving that for people. You don't care how much trouble people are going to go through. You want to cut taxes for rich people and suck up to Trump and save your ass in terms of your, in terms of your own elected ass. So, I that gives me hope. And people, it, there does. I am sensing a real. I think this last Sunday of the talk shows, the Democratic response was so mealy-mouthed to, to the National Guard being deployed in Washington, D.C., that there is a certain amount of okay, Democrats need new leadership, or somebody needs to just take over because they are what they are doing now. Is useless. It's worse than useless. It's giving the opposition time to do what they want. And so I do stay in communication with some of the reps that I've worked with on and they do seem to get that there is there is a real rage right now because something has fundamentally changed. We're not it's we're there. The United States of America, a country that was, founded on a lot of ideals, a lot of which we never quite fulfilled, has fundamentally become an authoritarian state. That is what has happened. It's incredibly sad. I'm sad about it. I'm going to do everything I can to fight it. Where, countries have come out of authoritarianism. It happens. You need a vast people-powered movement, and Americans, we as a culture, we're not used to demonstrations. Europeans, they're used to, oh, what's the demo for today? but we're not used to that. We have a, there's a sort of gut level distrust of civil disobedience amongst most Americans, but people are really frustrated and really scared. And I'm hoping that it is a massive nonviolent movement. That is the way that it has changed in most places. We all actually have to do it though.
Yeah, we have to do it. I mean, that's what Rachel Maddow said early on, that, she was noticing all of the resistance, and she says, as long as it stays nonviolent. Now, of course, we know that there could be bad actors, but beyond that, if the majority is nonviolent, that is how we will overcome this. And it's from all of the people who study fascism and authoritarianism, it's usually you got to nip it in the beginning before it really cements. And anyway, I could talk to you forever, but like I said, I know you have other things to do. So thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I really appreciate it. I think you're awesome. We all love
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you,
Well,
John.
it's so kind of you. I have a, I'm sure a fancy Malibu party that I'm being invited to, full of A-listers. That I've just got to run. I've got to run and go be with my friends, the A-listers. Kimberly, it was such a pleasure. Thanks for asking. It was very kind of you to ask me to do this, and I'm sure we will talk again. And I enjoy your feed on social media.
Thank you.
I recommend it to folks, although your people listening probably it. But
Well, maybe some new people who are just here to say hello to you. So
Okay,
awesome, John.
great.
Well, thank you so much, and you have a lovely one.
Yes, you too.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages, and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange? President. And has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun, I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool and let's kick it.